Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to the Contemplations of the Lotus Eaters. I'm Hugo and I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
And we're going to be discussing individualism today. This is going to be a follow-up on the discussion yesterday of collectivism, and so individualism as the other part of this pair of values, let's say. And so specifically, we're going to be focusing on the research around individualism and what it means, what the implications of it are, because Josh has some data on individualism around the world, so we're going to be discussing that.
Sure. So I may as well define what individualism is, although I imagine many people already are familiar, but just so everyone's on board, individualistic cultures tend to conceive of people as self-directed, autonomous, and they tend to prioritize independence and uniqueness as cultural values. And that is opposed to collectivist cultures, on the other hand, which we talked about yesterday, which tend to see people as connected with others and embedded in a broader social context. As such, they tend to emphasize interdependence, family relationships, and social conformity.
Right. And so these definitions, they are about cultures, right? You said individuals, cultures tend to do something.
Yes.
And so this is about people's values in aggregate, right? This is not about political systems, not so much. I mean, we can talk about them later as well.
Sure.
I'm sure you're going to make the distinction. But this definition specifically is about people's values, and then if you aggregate those people's values, what it produces in the
yeah.
whole.
I'm not focusing on the political side here. I'm purely looking at people's behaviors and values and how they shape certain things. And of course, these sorts of things inform political systems and discussions, but I'm kind of keeping that out of it for the time being, just to keep things simpler.
Yep. So when we're talking about individualism, we don't mean political systems, just to make it clear up front to avoid any confusion.
Sure. So I'd like to run over this map that we also looked at yesterday, which of course is from Scientific American, and it's still got the rubbish title at the top because being individualist doesn't necessarily make you selfish, but nevertheless, you can see North America is relatively individualistic, the UK, France, Italy, for some reason Sweden is more individualistic than Norway or Finland. And then you've got Australia and South Africa. So it's kind of the Western sphere, isn't it? So yesterday we went over countries such as China and also Ghana and some Central American countries that were more collectivist. But today we're going to be focusing purely on the trends around the world about individualism. And also, it is going to be looking at some of the countries that are largely collectivist as well. And I've got one research paper that I'm just going to go through because it's very extensive and it's very rich in information. And it's called Global Increases in Individualism. And if you do want to read the whole thing, that'll be linked down below in the reading list. And it looked both at individualistic practices, such as things that people do, and also their values. And it had data from the 1960s through to 2011. And this research was conducted by Henry Santos, Michael Varnum, and Igor Grossman from the University of Waterloo in Canada and Arizona State University in America, of course.
And so this is from when?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was 2017, because The data only goes up to 2011, and I think it took quite a long time for only three people to... So I think it's relatively accurate, and you'll see that it builds a very good picture of what the growing trends are in the world. So I want to define what the practices and values are that they actually wanted to look at. So under the practices, one of the things was household size, which is the mean number of relatives by either blood, marriage or adoption per household.
Mm-hmm.
So you would imagine that a collectivist kind of culture would have lots of people under one roof, and individualistic places, you have a larger prevalence of people living alone, which is also another one of the practices. So they say that living alone is more likely to happen in individualistic societies. And also they looked at older adults living alone, which was single members of households in which the household consisted of someone aged 60 or older.
Mm-hmm.
And they suggested that a higher percentage indicates greater individualism.
So it's just single, in this specific point, it's just single member households of 60 or older. It's not maybe couples living together, but without children or without the rest of their family.
Yeah.
Okay.
And these are just kind of pointers that you had already been indicated from previous research.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these dimensions, I know, out kind of in the abstract sound a bit strange, like it's not necessarily intuitive, although you can kind of understand why they would include them, but they are backed up by previous research that has looked at cultural differences.
Mm-hmm.
And found them in these separate dimensions. And there's also the final practice that they looked at is the ratio of divorces and separated people to the number of married and widowed people. And they suggested that a higher ratio indicated greater individualism.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is probably one of the more strong measures, because in collectivist cultures, the divorce rates tend to be a lot lower than in individualistic cultures. And then moving on.
This is how they define individualism, right?
At least in terms of the practices.
Yeah. I mean, these practices and these values that you're going to talk about now, those are the points how they define individualism. So they take those, mm-hmm. and they say, okay, this is probably indicative of individualism, mm-hmm. and so we're gonna rank countries based on those statistics, mm-hmm. and we're gonna say whether they're individualistic or not based on how they score in these points.
I might take a kind of side point here and say that they came to these certain topics not because they were trying to get an all-encompassing view of what makes a society individualist, but they had already had previous research that indicates that these dimensions are important.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily that they have ignored certain things that people in the audience may consider important. It's more that they knew that these things had been established and therefore they used them rather than something else. Because
right.
I can certainly see that this is hardly a kind of cohesive measure of individualism, mm-hmm. in its entirety, right? Because it's you can think of lots of other practices that might be commonplace in an individualistic society, which may not be included here.
Yeah, so if you say there's such a thing in abstract as individualism, mm-hmm. the value of individualism, then you can say, okay, which practices and which values represent that best?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't have to be intuitive, but there can be a couple of those, which then if you take and you measure those, you take that as the proxy of individualism, even though those might not be the complete list of what individualism means.
Yeah, and it's almost looking at markers of what individualism may kind of be associated with.
Right.
And it's looking for traces rather than trying to say, okay, we're going to create this huge questionnaire to measure your level of individualism, because as we saw in the previous episode, it's all culturally relative and your frame of reference shapes your responses to something like that.
Yeah, so, just to reiterate, right? When mm-hmm. you ask someone about their behavior and about their attitudes, what they tend to do is to compare themselves to their immediate surroundings, so to their own culture. And mm-hmm. so they're not necessarily considering the whole world or other cultures. And so therefore, you don't have the results that you get are only usable locally. They're not comparable globally, right?
Yeah, because people don't really have a frame of reference for other cultures.
Exactly.
When they're judging themselves, based on the people that they know.
Yep.
And more often than not, most people don't know a huge wide array of international kind of people, unless you're kind of rich and mm-hmm. famous, in which case then you're probably not very typical and not very useful to study.
Yep.
But nevertheless, I'll move on to the values now. And one of the values that they looked at was the importance of friends versus family, in which respondents answered two items asking them about the importance of their friends and family. And they rated that on a Likert scale, which is, for example, one is very important and four not very important, and then you have measures in between. And then they also looked at the values of teaching children to be independent, and they looked at percentages of respondents who said that it was important to teach your children values of independence in just dichotomous yes or no measures, which I know is actually very difficult to evaluate statistically, because I used dichotomous values and it was horrendous to
that's an important kind of addition.
If there's any data scientists watching and you're trying to do something easy for your kind of research project, do not do dichotomous variables, because it is a nightmare.
But do yes, no, and a grey area.
Yeah, well, three is still just as difficult, if not more so. But,
okay, well, don't do that then.
They also found that individualistic societies socialise children to be independent, whereas collectivist societies put greater emphasis on obedience. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be relatively consistent with the comparison.
So that's how they justify putting the independence of children in there, right?
Yeah. So if you compare children from China and children from the United States, children from China are going to be taught to be more obedient than children in the United States, mm-hmm. for better or worse. And the final value that they looked at was preference for self-expression, which respondents were asked to think about their country's goals in the future and to select two goals. So it's pretty self-explanatory there.
What types of goals? I don't really understand what this was about specifically.
So they would kind of say, okay, we want to promote greater freedoms or freedom of speech, and those are the things that they listed particularly. Mm-hmm. The collectivist kind of targeted things would be like, I would like to see greater things for my family or my society or my local area.
Right.
And it was the kind of dichotomy between kind of liberalism almost and the kind of family values, which is a very weird kind of thing to put at odds. But I imagine there are some people that would say that they are very much at odds that are watching at the minute. But nevertheless.
Okay, so they were giving these two kind of preferences or scenarios, and they were supposed to select one of them.
They were given four choices, I believe, and they just had to rank certain things.
Yeah. Okay. And so they had these values. So these kind of eight things, these four practices and four values, come together to produce that individualism metric.
Sure.
And those are household size, living alone, older adults living alone, divorce, importance of friends versus family, the independence of children, and then preference for self-expression. So seven, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm going to list all of the 78 countries that they measured over 51 years. So
here goes. Sit back and drink some tea.
So Bangladesh, Argentina, Albania, Bolivia, Austria, Armenia, Brazil, Canada, Australia, Burkina Faso, Chile, Azerbaijan, Cameroon, France, Belarus, Colombia, Hungary, Belgium, Costa Rica, India, Bulgaria, Dominican Republic, Ireland, China, Ecuador, Mexico, Croatia, Fiji, Morocco, Czech Republic, Greece, Portugal, Denmark, Haiti, Romania, Estonia, Indonesia, Spain, Finland, Israel, Switzerland, Georgia, Kenya, United States, Germany, Malawi, Uruguay, Iceland, Malaysia, Italy, Mali, Japan, Nicaragua, Latvia, Panama, Lithuania, Puerto Rico, Macedonia, Thailand, Malta, Venezuela, Moldova, Vietnam, Netherlands, Zambia, New Zealand, Nigeria, Norway, Peru, Poland, Russian Federation, Slovenia, South Africa, South Korea, Sweden, Turkey, Ukraine, and the best till last, United Kingdom.
Good job.
Oh, that was a mouthful.
That's good. Yeah.
So,
so what were those?
I'm not going to list them again.
No, so those are the countries included in that measure,
yes.
Right?
Yes. So because of the limitations of the data, only certain countries could be measured on certain criteria because of the data sets available. And of course, they looked at it from 1960 to 2011. So I imagine that there weren't many people gathering data on people's values in Africa, for example.
Yep.
So they kind of broke things down into certain subsets. And these are the subsets I'll be talking about.
Okay.
So they found that 34 out of 41 countries showed a substantial increase in individualistic practices.
From 1960 to 2011.
Yes, that's right. And they found that 39 out of 53 countries showed a similar substantial increase in individualistic values.
That's the distinction between the two categories,
yes,
that you listed, yeah.
So they had more data on the values than they did the practices,
mm-hmm.
and also more countries that they polled, although there were more in total, increased in individualistic values. So they kind of averaged all of these increases together, both the values and the practices, between all countries, and they found that between 1960 and 2011, there's roughly around a 12% increase.
In individualism, in the aggregate,
yes.
Right.
So this represents all of the countries I've listed, and they just averaged all of the data. So even the ones that didn't increase have been included there.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine that the variation in the data would be very large. So there would be some cases where there was a huge increase in individualism and somewhere there's not at all, or somewhere it's gone the opposite way. But this is just the general trend on the 78 countries that I listed.
So do you know anything about concrete examples of those extremes? Which country has gone way too, like, a lot further into individualism or a lot further into collectivism than over those 50
years? I've got some of the ones that went the opposite direction, but they didn't actually list the ones that went extremely into individualism. Oh. They directed you to supplementary material, and I couldn't actually find it, but it was quite frustrating.
I would think that they would have all the data in there.
No, because the paper was quite long, I think they direct people normally to their website. This is something that academics do quite often, where they want to keep the length of their research paper down relatively low, because then more people will read it. So they say, oh, if you're interested in the actual breakdown of it, we have the data on our website. But there wasn't really much of a link. But if you want to have some luck finding it, you'll probably be able to look for it through the researchers' names and such, because they usually have their own websites where they keep all their data.
And the study itself is linked below in the notes.
Absolutely, yeah. So they say, overall, these results show that the shift towards greater individualism is not confined to the developed world, because they also found that developed countries had also increased, but also developing countries were increasing in individualism as well. And the previous kind of... I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit here, but the previous kind of hypothesis was that it was tied very much to socioeconomic development, which they actually found to be the best predictor of their results. So they did some multi-level modeling, and they found that socioeconomic development emerged as a key predictor, explaining between 35 and 58% of the variance and change in individualism over time.
Mm-hmm. So as people get richer, they get more individualistic. That's the easy way to put it.
Yeah, and it seems to be a relatively strong and relatively simple trend. Mm-hmm. And the only real kind of counterexample is China, which they actually mention later. But on the whole, this seems to be a pretty accurate and valid explanation for much of the increases.
And so yesterday when we mentioned that collectivism seems to be... Well, let me start again. The benefits that collectivism is supposed to give to people are not actually as real as they might seem to be at first glance. And so if they're not that real, then the question is, why is there collectivism to begin with, right? If it's not actually good for people. And we had the hypothesis and running that it was because collectivism was being sustained by either necessity or obligation. Right?
Yeah, I would say it would be a little bit more than just a hypothesis, because you had the examples of the rice farms where it was clearly necessity that they were working together with the people that, out of, you know, desire to feed their families and such. So this was the most important thing, and they were just tolerating their differences because they had to for the good of themselves and their family, right?
And so the point was that either... kind of natural factors, natural limitations force people into collectivism where they otherwise maybe wouldn't have been. And so that's one option. And the other option is that they're forced there through politics, through political means.
Right? Yeah. And this is where that China comes into play here, because a lot of the explanations here seem to be focused on the influence of the Chinese state on enforcing collectivism, where they suggest that their economic development would suggest that there would be more.
Yeah, and before we get into that in more detail, I just wanted to go back to what you said about socioeconomic development being a good predictor of individualism. Well, then that makes sense in light of the thesis that we had yesterday, that because if you get richer, that one restraint, that restraint from nature gets eliminated progressively,
sure,
right?
Because the necessity aspect.
Exactly, because you don't need anymore to kind of be collectivistic to be able to survive in that the extreme sense, right?
Absolutely.
So that's that would be a possible explanation of why we're seeing this result.
Mm-hmm. And they even went so far as to break down the actual components of this socioeconomic development, which contributed, and they found that in particular the increasing proportion of white collar jobs, increasing education levels and increasing household income were some of the best predictors within socioeconomic development.
Right. Yep.
And that all seems relatively intuitive, doesn't it? As in, mm-hmm. All of this allows people to be less dependent on other people, mm-hmm. and more independent. If they're getting a good education and a good income, they can support themselves and therefore they can afford to be more independent. It's not necessarily that it was a choice, it was just something that seems to have happened.
And that independent doesn't necessarily mean atomistic or anything like that, right? We saw yesterday in one of the studies that, or in several of them actually, that if you have that kind of collectivist attitude, what it can produce is a strife between people and conflicts and a lack of intimacy, right? And so it doesn't necessarily mean that you're further away from people, that you're removed from society or from community, right? It just means that you're viewing yourself as a self-sustaining person and kind of separate from others. You're not being reliant on them that much.
And those, just to reiterate from yesterday, those conflicts arose more from them being forced together almost, I felt like. Mm-hmm. Just looking at the kind of growing evidence about the rice farming in particular, it seemed like the interdependence caused the resentment more than anything, because it was repeated research in this area that seemed to indicate that at the very least.
Right.
They also looked at a whole host of other kind of more circumstantial factors, more frequent disasters, less prevalence of infectious diseases and less climactic stress, which they found to be linked to individualistic kind of attitudes. Mm-hmm. So if people were more kind of disaster prone or in an area which was more likely to have a disaster, then they would be more likely to look out for themselves. I don't think that's necessarily much of a surprise to anyone. Mm-hmm. And also, when there's a reduction in infectious diseases, there's less of a need to be reliant on, say, medical infrastructure, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So this all makes intuitive sense,
but it's not just that. It's the aspect of that necessity coming back in.
Right? Exactly, yeah. And that's what I feel like they're outlining here, that these necessities seem to have some kind of impact. And the climate, they make it, the wording that they use makes it sound like global warming, but it's more an extreme climate. So if you're in a desert, mm-hmm. you might be more dependent on people around you because the environment is hostile.
Yes, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So they also found that the increases in socioeconomic development preceded the increase in individualism. So it wasn't that they went up neatly together. It is that your kind of socioeconomic situation went up, and then eventually the individualism went up as well.
Right, right. And so that ties a little bit into what we talked about a couple of weeks back with development theories, because we asked the question that Robinson and Acemoglu asked in Why Nations Fail. They asked whether it's possible to make a country kind of politically open first and then rich, or whether it's better to make it rich first and then politically open, right? They had some preferences and they had some conclusions. I'm not going to spoil them here, but they said that one of those paths is basically hopeless and one of those paths is maybe more promising. And so this is something that would be another data point in that theory to use as evidence.
This seems to indicate that economic development leads to the political institutions. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're trying to allude to here, in that the socioeconomic development increasing will lead to greater individualism, and therefore it might lead to greater dependence on, say, a social democracy or mm-hmm. something like that, going from, say, a dictatorship or absolute monarchy.
So what part of that whole field that is looking at development and development economics, that a running theme is that if you try to make a country not, if a country is not democratic, and what they care about primarily is democracy, not in the political sphere. If you try to make it first kind of wealthy and then wait until it turns into democracy because of that wealth, that usually doesn't happen. And there's some question marks around whether it can happen the opposite way, but that's an open, I think that's still an open question around what you can actually accomplish and what you can't. But I mean, that's only a side point. I mean, sure. I'm going on tangent.
No worries. So just to summarize some of their kind of conclusions here, I'm going to read a couple of quotes. So much of the research on the manifestation of rising individualism showed, for example, increasing narcissism and high divorce rates, which focused on the United States. Our findings show that this pattern also applies to other countries that are not Western or industrialized.
Mm-hmm.
And they also say, although there are still cross-national differences in individualism and collectivism, the data indicated that overall most countries are moving towards greater individualism.
Right. And have they found that the already more individualistic countries are moving faster along the individualism scale or slower than the less individualistic countries? Now, I'm interested in these differences between each part of the world, let's say.
They didn't really go, they kind of looked at it in aggregate as a trend, and I was kind of a bit disappointed that they didn't go into it, because I read the whole paper and mm-hmm. I didn't seem to spot any mention of which countries that are already developed are trending, which I was a little bit disappointed about. But I would just say, anecdotally, I would say that as wealth seems to increase, because you've still got people who are dependent on others. It's not mm-hmm. it's not like it's going away. So the kind of individualism in aggregate for an entire society is probably going to be going up, because as you get wealthier and wealthier, people are going to be less and less dependent on one another,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be more independent, which is, of course, predictive of having individualistic attitudes. And I think that kind of answers your question, although it's a shame that the paper doesn't do it for you.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in those regional differences and kind of in comparison between them. So maybe if I found the data at some point, I'll can do an article about it.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, actually.
Right, we'll see about that in the future.
So some of the countries actually decreased in individualism. Okay. So it wasn't across the board an increase. For example, Cameroon, Malawi, Malaysia and Mali, three countries beginning with M for some reason, showed a non-negligible decline in individualistic practices.
Okay.
And Armenia, China, Croatia, Ukraine and Uruguay showed a non-negligible decline in individualistic values.
So does that mean that none of those countries showed a decline in both values and practices?
I would say so, yeah. Otherwise they would be mentioned in both.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's kind of weird. Either one or the other. And it may just be in part because they only had data for one or the other.
Fair enough.
So it's difficult to tell. Again, they didn't specify, unfortunately. But I imagine there would probably be good data for China in particular, mm-hmm. and also Ukraine and Croatia. So perhaps it is just that the values change, but the practices haven't for those countries. I'm only speculating here. So.
Armenia, Uruguay, Malaysia, like those seem like the places where you can get data pretty well.
Sure. So they say, the fact that most countries that did not show an increase in individualist values were among the lowest in socioeconomic development over time, which was consistent with the observation that socioeconomic development drove the rise in individualism. So they found that these countries in mm-hmm. particular perhaps didn't have the best economic development, and it maybe decreased because of this. I don't know whether that's actually what they're trying to say there, but another quote here is talking about China, in which they say, China is an exception to this pattern, showing a decrease in individualist values, even though the country has experienced economic growth. Notably, China has a complex socio-economic history, so it'll be worthwhile to investigate this country in more detail in future research.
That might be a good springboard to kind of talk about China a little bit more in that, because
yeah,
what we mentioned in the beginning, the difference between an individualistic political scene, let's say, and individualistic attitudes among the population, that those might be different things, because not every country has a political system which copies well the values of the people that are living under it, right? And so mm-hmm. you could have a situation where the population at large will have some values, maybe they're going to be more individualistic, maybe more collectivistic, and then the political system will not actually reflect that that much, right? And I think that's what they might be saying here a little bit. And the other thing they might be saying is that you can have a political system that then kind of influences the attitudes of the people quite a lot, right? That it's not just what they do based on their socioeconomic situation, it's also what they're forced towards because of politics.
Yeah, and I think China would be the good example of that, because of course that the structure of their government, that they're not exactly taught to think freely, are they? And individualism is seen as something that is kind of Western and associated with enemies of China. Yeah. Therefore, it's
as opposed to communism, it's not very Western at all.
I know. I mean, the irony there as well. I mean, I'm not saying that they're right to teach this. Obviously,
communism in non-Western countries is Western imperialism. Just
wholeheartedly support this message. So, I think it might be worthwhile to actually discuss the implications of these findings on some of the practices and values, because the general trend is that individualism is increasing worldwide, mm-hmm. but it may not be as positive as it may seem to begin with. Although I'm very much in favour of individualism, and I would like to see more of it, and I'm pleased to hear that it's kind of growing around the world, because it doesn't seem to me that collectivism is particularly helpful. I think that there can be limitations, particularly when you're looking at the practices of people living alone and leaving older adults living alone. That seems particularly harmful to people, and I don't think that's necessarily something that would be good. But then it's also worth mentioning that these are only the markers of individualistic societies. They're not mm-hmm. the main factors or the be-all and end-all. But right. I thought it might be worth just discussing the potential implications here.
Yeah. I mean, these are the things that they selected to, you know, measure individualism in some way. But it doesn't mean that this is what individualism is, right? You have a lot of positive aspects of individualism that were not included just because they were not as good predictors of individualism in the abstract.
Yeah, these things are easy to measure, and because they were looking at the change over time from 1960 to 2011, then you need the data to be there already.
And you need to find something very concrete and very objective like that, and very high level like that, because otherwise you're not going to get the data.
Absolutely. So in terms of household size and that decreasing over time, I think that's kind of tied into the necessity thing that we were talking about mm-hmm. earlier, in that I imagine most people don't want to live crushed in a tiny little house with all of their extended family. But in poorer, more collectivist countries, I'm making a bit of a generalization there, but generally speaking, when you're poorer, you're more dependent on others.
Yeah. And not even just like in a tiny house with your extended family, right? But if you have a mansion, right, and you live with your extended family in a huge mansion, you might still not want to do that. You might like your extended family, but you don't necessarily want to live with them. I mean, you haven't chosen them. You might like them enough, but it's not necessarily like the thing that you would want the most. Like, that might be true for a lot of people, right? And so if you're in a situation of necessity, that might be something that you have to do mm-hmm. because otherwise you wouldn't be able to get ahead or make a good life for yourself. But if you have the option to do that because of rising socioeconomic levels, let's say, mm-hmm. development, then that is possible. So you don't need to be in that situation where you can't really choose who you're going to live with and who you're not.
Yeah, and I think it's not necessarily an indicator about whether people are seeing their kind of family less. Mm-hmm. And in particular,
that wasn't measured, by the way, how often they're seeing their family. Like, that there might be that as individualism goes up, they're living with their family less, but they're seeing them much more, something like that.
Yeah, that's what I was about to suggest.
Oh, like, sorry. Stealing your points.
Yeah, that's all right. So I feel like people might, in a Western country, at least many people that I know, although they may not live with their family, they might live close by and may visit them quite regularly. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, they have that independence, but they're not cutting themselves off from their family entirely. Mm-hmm. And like the markers of perhaps living alone, it may not actually be as bad as it may seem, because they may still be seeing, you know, the family and friends just as much. But it's just that there is the money around for people to be able to afford to move out earlier before they mm-hmm. have a family and stuff like that. Like, I live alone at the minute, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's good. I mean, it's much, much better than living in a shared house when I was a student. So, I mean, it's seeming like a negative thing mm-hmm. superficially isn't necessarily the case, I think, in that especially with the ties to socioeconomic development, you're going to have more opportunities to do what you want. And it might just be that people being around their family might actually, more than they want to, might actually cause more resentment and less harmony, which is certainly indicated from some of the research from yesterday.
And so what you said is that you're more able to do what you want is something that I was thinking about now with the living alone thing, is that that might reflect a little bit intergenerational values, right? Or values that differ among generations. So, for example, younger people might be more drawn to cities where if you have more dynamic aspects of life, you have more exciting kind of opportunities, right? And then as you get older, a village life or rural life might be something more appealing to you.
That's definitely a trend that exists all around the world. Yeah.
And so if that's a trend that really exists, well, then you would expect people to kind of separate and not live together if they have those preferences that are quite different, right? Well, you would still expect them to see each other quite often if they like each other, but living apart might be actually what makes both of them happier because they don't have to compromise. They don't have to come together to a solution that is not great for either of them.
Yeah, that's a good point. Perhaps one of the worst aspects is the increasing divorce rate, but then at the same time, it might just be that there's other things at play here. And I feel like perhaps that it might be due to the fact that there are more opportunities for people to separate and they're not going to be stuck in marriages.
A bad relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas particularly with the association with socioeconomic development, it might be that you're financially dependent on a partner who you don't actually get along with anymore or never got along with in the first place. And it's just a necessity to stay with them. And I don't think that's necessarily good for either party there. Although obviously the introduction of children into that makes things a lot more complicated because then they have obligations to look after them and do what's best for them as well. So it's kind of a complicated thing where I feel like you probably, if in the case of being children involved, you would want to do the thing that's best for them. And perhaps divorcing might not be the best. It's obviously a case-by-case thing that people can judge for themselves. I'm certainly not one to talk. I've never been married. So
sometimes it might be best to stay together, sometimes to split apart, right? So it's not necessarily a cut and dry case either way. And so the divorce measure might be something that might look bad at first glance, but you can't really tell unless you look closely at what's behind it, what causes it, right? And why people are divorcing, and whether they're divorcing because they always wanted to and now they have the option because the necessity aspect has been alleviated, or whether they're divorcing because of some kind of social pathology that we have to identify.
Yeah, and I certainly think that there's some degree of this so-called pathology. I know that's perhaps quite a strong term.
Oh, but sorry.
No.
I'm not an expert on those terms. So.
But for example, the convenience of dating now means that people might feel like they have a greater selection of options and therefore they kind of have the fear of missing out, and the partner that they have, they're always evaluating against other people because of the ease of meeting other people, and you have like dating apps and stuff like that that might be helpful in convenience senses, but maybe very unhelpful for actually keeping people together and keeping them happy. And there's kind of conflicting data on that I haven't really looked into in great detail, but I am aware that there's a kind of difference in whether, or a difference of opinion, I should say, in whether these things are useful or not.
Yeah, I can imagine that it can have consequences either way, and that you really need to look closely at what it produces.
Absolutely. So finally, I'd like to look at the values that they discussed, and particularly the importance of friends versus family.
And so that was, just to reiterate, they were giving two statements, and they ranked each statement based on how important that is for them, right? So they were asked, how important is family for you? And they said, not at all, slightly, a lot, extremely, or something like that, right? And so they did that for the two questions, for family and for friends. And then they put those data together and saw which one was higher in which country, right?
And as we discussed yesterday, the in collectivist cultures, people tend to keep their friends kind of more at arm's length, but then they're also more socially supportive of them. So people in individualistic cultures tend to find that their friends are actually closer to them and vice versa than in I'm getting them mixed up now. I've said them so many times. The individualistic cultures tend to be more close with their friends. Yep. And I imagine the same would be true of family as well, considering that the collectivism kind of compels people to be close to one another all the time,
yeah.
Which is probably why it was a predictor in the first place.
Yeah, so it kind of forces you to be together, and then you, if you're forced to be in being together, you're not, you can develop a lot of conflicts,
yeah,
just because... Exactly. Yeah, resentment would be a big thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can't distance yourself from something that you don't like. Like that's a big deal, right? Over time.
Yeah, and I think this is perhaps one of the best things about the measures that they looked at, because if it means you're getting closer to other people, then surely that's a really kind of damning indictment of collectivism and a really strong point for individualism, because one of the kind of tenets of collectivism is that it's all about supporting people. Well, in this case, it seems like it's actually the opposite, and individualism seems to actually make people feel closer than collectivism, which is
nice. One of the bestsellers on the left, I think, if I'm not wrong, maybe I'm wrong, but a popular book on the left is, it's called Why Women Have Better Sex Under Communism.
What?
Yeah, and that's...
How do they come to those conclusions?
That's a clickbait book title, right?
Of course.
But they're identifying some kind of measures from the USSR and from like formerly socialist countries, and they're looking at women's sex lives.
And but surely in the USSR, if a woman gives her husband a bad score, he's going to gulag her forever, just like, how dare you, woman, disrespect me?
So... I think that I was just thinking about that when you said that individualism, more individualistic culture, actually create better relationships with your family and friends, right? And mm-hmm. so that's an important point, which I thought was funny. I thought it was funny to contrast that with that book that just says, okay, if you have communism, women can have better sex.
It sounds like a really weird advocacy for it as well. Like, this is all they've got now. I mean, they can't make the economic, the political, any philosophical argument. They're just like, yeah, this is it. Better sex, that's all we've got now. But even that now, I think, is rubbish. But, so, moving on somewhat ironically to measures of independent children. I think... independent children is good because independence is associated with confidence, and confidence is associated with success. So promoting these values probably going to lead to more successful children, and that's probably what many parents want. So I don't really think there's much debate there really about that.
I can imagine that most parents want their children to like their parents and mm-hmm. want them to be some family values and mm-hmm. stuff like that, right? So they want them to have some community values. Yeah, I'm repeating myself, but that's something that's not necessarily contradictory, right? They can still have good relationship with their families. In fact, based on what we've said so far, it seems like they're probably going to have better relationships with yeah. their surroundings if they're self-reliant, if they're independent, rather than if they're forced together.
Absolutely. And to kind of play devil's advocate against my own opinion here, you could make the argument that in taking away the independence and kind of supplanting in some more obedience, as in the more collectivist attitude, mm-hmm. it may be better in promoting kind of social norms, if that is your kind of aims. Yeah. If you want to tell people how to live, then I suppose that's going to be your thing. But it's perhaps not for me, although I'm sure if I were a parent, I would probably be far more inclined to say you need to do this and that. I don't want you turning out like a social justice warrior. I'd avoid that at all costs. All ethics would go out the window.
They'd be an independent social justice warrior.
Oh, it's no consolation really, is it? So in preferences for self-expression, again, this seems... relatively intuitive in that more self-expression is probably good, although to a certain extent I can see how it may be unhelpful in that it may lead to a bit of narcissism. Mm-hmm. Just like I'm telling you all about my feelings and you don't care, you're just telling me to be stoic and suck it up and get over it, which is generally good advice. Just
you get some Marcus Aurelius thrown at you.
You're using my own lines. So although Marcus Aurelius is very good in teaching you how to control your emotions and such, I suppose being able to feel comfortable in expressing yourself, mm-hmm. is probably very useful as a skill, and it's like almost being more emotionally articulate, and I can't really see that being a bad thing. And I see kind of self-expression and this sort of thing being associated with the arts and culture and things like that. And cultures that are more accepting of this sort of thing are probably going to have richer cultures in general, mm-hmm. just in terms of artistry, be it film, music, media in general. You get the idea, don't you?
Yep. No, I mean, that sounds good. That sounds like something, sounds like the opposite of what maybe proponents of collectivism would say. You know, mm-hmm. if you have a really atomistic culture, everyone just cares about themselves, about being most successful, you know, being in some kind of corporate setting and making the most money, and then not focusing on art and culture, right? So this would be something that's not necessarily what it looks like, because what it looks like is that if you're a bit more individualistic, what you also value is self-expression, which includes those artistic things and those kind of cultural values.
Yeah, and I think they are very valuable, and I think people are perhaps losing the value of that a little bit in some Western cultures, which is a shame. Although they might be increasing in individualism in some dimensions, I feel like some of them might be kind of backsliding in some areas. It's not going to be all uniform, and some dimensions may be increasing, some may be decreasing, but I would also say that there's no better time to be a consumer of kind of art and culture than when it's all at your fingertips, is there?
Yeah. And there's a lot of variation, right? It's not just one thing that you can follow that is, you know, original. It's mm-hmm. just the variation.
You have the freedom of choice. Exactly. And I mean, choice is one of the key components of being in an individualistic society. And it's something that I very much enjoy, having quite niche interests. So it works out well for everyone, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, this was quite interesting in looking at that research and like how they define individualism and what they actually make out of it, where the world is moving and what it actually means. So thank you for bringing this up.
That's quite all right.
Interesting.
And thank you very much for watching, and make sure to check out Contemplations every weekend, and also check out our other stuff on our website. We've got news, analysis, all that good stuff. We've got some interviews. We've of course got the podcast as well. And
yeah, so if you really like what we're doing and what the other members of the team are doing, you can support us at lotusseed.com by becoming a premium member, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for watching.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.